The 10th anniversary of the Homeland Security Presidential Directive 12 is upon us. HSPD 12 created a government-wide standard for the personal ID cards federal employees use to access agency facilities. Ken Ammon is Chief Strategy Officer of Exedium and my guest on Industry Chatter today. Ken, it's a pleasure to have you in the studio. Thank you for being here today. Let's start with what Exedium does for your customers in the federal government. Welcome to the program.
Sure. Thanks for having me. So Exedium, and you could learn a lot more from the website, it's X-C-E-E-D-I-U-M, but we are a privileged identity and access management company, and how that applies to HSPD 12 is we ease the implementation of PIV and CAC into logical infrastructure, and we also provide that connectivity of identity to access, which has been a big challenge in cybersecurity.
So the end of August 2004, HSPD 12 comes out, and we had folks like Karen Evans on the program, on the station, talking about it when it came out, laying out the vision for it. The deadline was supposed to be 2006. Everybody, employees and contractors, were supposed to have cards. The whoosh that you heard at the end of 2006 was that deadline coming and going, and not everybody had cards and so on. Where do we stand a decade in now, in your view, Ken, as far as deployment and as far as effectiveness of the system?
So I think that a lot of progress has taken place over the last couple of years. I think a lot of that's probably tied to a number of issues. The two primary ones are that there's a cross-agency priority goals out of the White House that for cybersecurity that focus on four areas, one of them being logical integration of PIV or strong authentication. And they're measuring across the various agencies on where they stand with that. And I think that tying through the CFO's office has made a difference in really putting some teeth into how that gets implemented. Mm-hmm. And I think that a lot of what you see now with nation-state attacks inside of government systems and the real challenge around not having strong identity tied to access inside of these systems has been recognized in a painful fashion for many organizations and government agencies. And that's driven out, I think, the real opportunity to see value in the implementation.
Cards, the physical cards, were the kind of cutting edge technology in 2004. They're not really in 2014. What progression have we seen in technology in the physical capabilities of identity management in the 10 years that may apply, that may be practical for the government to use in the coming 10 years?
Yes, so the cards themselves have a number of features on them, including digital signature and authentication, non-repudiation. And those features become very valuable as sort of our laws and policies catch up with implementing those capabilities. So I think that what you've seen to date that's starting to form the future for these systems is this drive toward derived credentials. And the ability to use now mobile platforms and still have the same back-end infrastructure that has been invested in over the last 10 years to manage the certificates, but be able to leverage now your mobile device and new developments around things like near-field communication so that you can do physical access systems as well as logical access systems from a device that most folks already have in their pocket.
Tell me what a derived credential is, what that term means.
Yeah, so a derived credential is you're really looking for the ability to take that same identity and the attributes around that identity and put it into another form factor. So you have this card that you wear on your neck with a picture, and there's a lot built into that tamper resistance and other things. So if it's lost, there's not an issue there. And so the challenge, I think, is moving that to a mobile device and maintaining that same level of assurance and integrity so that if you lose your phone, someone can't scrape the identity off of that and replay it. So, but you do want those two items to be tied to a single identity. So that's where you get into a derived credential.
You used the word scraping, and I recall that as this developed in 2004, 2006, 2008, we got a couple of kicks in the newsroom out of the proliferation of the terms scraping and sniffing. We didn't expect that these would be terms that we would use to describe what was going on. What is the state of the art in security now, though? Because those are two terms that are associated with these cards and identity management more broadly. How are agencies doing and how is the technology at protecting the information that's contained on these cards?
So I think that there's always this discussion around the integrity and assurance built into the card. And there's a lot of gee whiz science that goes into trying to figure out how much you can do to steal that information. But I think if you back it up and you look at what we're doing today, just take two use cases, passwords and just flashing the badge at the gate of a facility that you're going in. And technology like Exceedium brings really allows you to take that identity and apply it in a way that hasn't been done before. So where you have these sort of roles that you can't tie to any user, you now can tie that to the identity. So without being too brutal on the assurance of the card, I think sometimes you have to look at what you're replacing. Mm-hmm. And I know I shared a panel at the recent Smart Card Alliance session, and there was some conversation around now they're doing some national agency checks automated as you show your CAC card going onto bases. So they're actually reading the certificate off of it. Mm-hmm. And a significant number, without giving out the exact number, a significant number of felons have been picked up just in the last 3 months that otherwise were walking in and out of bases. And this is this ability to tie this rich data repository we have on individuals, or in the logical access, the ability to constrain somebody based upon who they really are, mm-hmm. rather than just a role that they have.
What are the holdups that are preventing organizations, whether they're federal agencies or somebody else, from doing a full check on everybody? When you describe that scenario, it sounds to me like there is a shortcoming somewhere. There's some reason why they've decided it's more important to just let people go after a quick check with the eyeballs rather than really verify those certificates. Do we have a sense of why that is?
I think it's just risk management and investment priorities. Sometimes it takes a significant issue, whether that's the Navy Yard incident or whether that's something like an Edward Snowden. Mm-hmm. It takes an incident where you really have to go back in behind that and try to both clean it up, analyze it, and take a hard look on what you could have done to prevent these incidents. And so I think in any of these cases, whether they tie directly to those losses, they see that there's clear opportunity to do a better job and without a significant investment.
Ken Ammon is Chief Strategy Officer at Exceedium, my guest on Industry Chatter. And if I was going to have a magic word, I would have made it Snowden. So now that you've said it, let's go that direction. One of the things that kind of threw Congress for a loop after the Snowden thing happened was he didn't release information that he wasn't pre-cleared to see. He just decided he was going to be a bad actor and release information that he was otherwise authorized to see. So what can we learn about access from that incident?
Yes. Yeah, so I think implementing this term called least privilege is really a foundation. And that basically says you start with no access, and access is granted based upon a real need, granted for a specific period of time, and that process is revisited. And automation is key there. And I know that a lot of systems are maybe antiquated and don't provide those facilities, but I think that's where technology really comes into play, and much has been done in development to solve these problems. And so I think you always have to have a policy. That policy has to be enforced through automation, because I think we've seen that human enforcement of these policies does not keep up. And ultimately, individuals accumulate these access and credentials or privileges over time. And I tell you, you really find out what challenge you have when you try to go in behind loss and just do forensics on it, mm-hmm. and figure out, well, so what has this person done for the last 2, 5? You can imagine if he would have been in that job for, let's say, 5 to 7 years, how would you even go about reassessing what the access was over time? And so you really need automation and the ability to tie that identity to access and maintain those records for, there hasn't been a policy developed on that yet, but I certainly recommend that you, for the cost of storage, you hold on to those records for quite some time, because loss is significant.
The term least privilege, L-E-A-S-T, privilege, is
yes.
That correct? You talked about automation being the key there. What does that look like? And is this a situation where somebody has access to this information for 2 months and then that's revisited? And how do you automate that in such a way so that you don't have to have human eyeballs on it on an ongoing basis?
So I think that the real gasoline that's being poured on HSPD implementation here comes from two areas that are sort of tangential but all tie together. One is FedRAMP, which is a significant issue around identity credentialing, and there's a lot of conversation around how to handle identity and access management. The second is this CDM, or Continuous Diagnostics and Mitigation Program, where phase two, which will be coming up next year, is titled Least Privilege and Infrastructure Integrity. And they contemplate five tool areas, one being identity or credentialing, the other being trust and identities, and then behavior and some other capabilities. But I think this is an area that over the last couple of years, there's been significant technology advancement in this area, and easing that implementation of things like PIV or CAC to separate identity and authentication from authorization. And so that's the real key. The fact that I identify myself positively and I authenticate myself doesn't mean that I should start off with a host of access. I should start with zero access. And I think that what you see developing here is this concept that identity is the new perimeter. There is no longer a border or a moat around our systems with cloud and mobility. And so it all starts with identifying yourself. And I think we're very happy to see those advancements, because our conversations with industry analysts, we serve both commercial, about a 50 split between commercial and government markets. The industry analysts have really looked at government as in a leadership position with the PIV and CAC card, and having trust and identity as well as strong authentication. And their best practice now is you really should not be using passwords. It should be two-factor authentication, particularly for users that have are either setting the security policies or have a sort of a significant amount of access based upon the job that they have, like system administrators.
I would like you to explore a little bit more the nexus of the cloud and the transition to the cloud that agencies are starting to make and will make more in the next several years, and FedRAMP and identity management, how it all fits together.
Sure. So part of the value I think we get to supply from the vendor community is in conversations that we have and looking at policy, we sometimes connect dots that otherwise don't seem to be connecting well on the government side and sometimes have problems with opportunities for waste or overruns. But there's this clear connection between FedRAMP and NIST. They take the NIST security controls and adopt them in FedRAMP. And in the latest update to the NIST controls, they have specifically called out by what they now term as something by reference, HSPD-12. And that hadn't been done in the past. And so you had ICAM and FICAM, and they were driving this policy home with HSPD-12, but it really didn't connect into the security world as an implementation for security controls. So now HSPD-12 is called out by reference. FedRAMP is now implementing Rev4, which is where this reference is made inside of this new implementation of FedRAMP. And that will tie together those ends. And one of the things we've been trying to do is bring awareness to the fact that these things all work together. FICAM, FedRAMP, and the NIST controls, as well as what they're doing around CDM, they really all are saying the same thing, although it's not necessarily right up there in front. But it's take advantage of this investment in the PIV and CAC infrastructure that exists. And then, you know, I think that the value in being able to manage your risk moving into cloud, and handling some of these challenges of, you know, users being any place on many different devices can be done with a manageable amount of risk.
Is there a wrinkle in identity management that bring your own device provides, or is that a potential benefit? It strikes me as an outsider looking in, it adds a tremendous layer of complication. But in a FedRAMP type environment, in a cloud environment, that might not be the case, I guess.
Yeah, there's really these two layers, and I think we've spent a lot of time in security dealing with devices. And, you know, that has yielded a lot of interesting developments in technology, and this idea that you have NAC and devices are either allowed on or not if they meet a certain policy. Sort of step one that eases the ability for folks to bring their own device as long as it meets a certain standard and there's certain capability installed. But all you know is it's a device. You just don't know who's on the other end of it. And this idea that I'm going to look at something like an IP address or a shared role and figure out whether they should be accessing this or that, that is where the evolution comes in. And I think that's where I think the risk management value of identity and access management in a federated perspective has a play inside of cloud.
Does everybody who should have some kind of certified credential in government, whether it's a contractor or an employee, have them now, or is there still more room for people that should have them and don't right now?
Yes. So there's certainly first challenge in issuing these cards was mostly just to issue the card and show it.
Get them out the door.
Get them out the door and meet that checkbox. And so the logical implementation has really, I think, hit folks between the eyes. And I think the cross-agency priorities put the pressure on being able to implement and report that you've implemented. So I think that if you have a new program, you can bake in the expense and have that integrated solution. The challenge has been the host of legacy systems and traditional infrastructure that you have to merge now with virtualized data centers and cloud infrastructure. So you want to look, and there are technologies out there. Certainly, we have a technology that plays against all of those spaces and allows you from single platform to use that PIV card, take advantage of legacy infrastructure as well as sort of these more advanced infrastructures that exist in cloud and virtualized systems.
The spread of these cards, as we mentioned at the beginning, took longer than expected. Is it your sense, though, that we're at a maturity level now that agencies should feel comfortable with if they're using them? You know, you mentioned the bases where people can just walk on, flash the badges. That seems still way too old school for this kind of a platform. But when they're used effectively, can the agencies feel confident that they're really secure and not just going through a process to check off a box?
Well, I think you can certainly advance from where you are today.
Mm-hmm.
And this is a conversation point that happens in security far too often. There is a lot of analysis done on what you would be fielding in tomorrow's solution, and they try to pick it apart, and everything has flaws. So, but take a look at what you have today, and you have passwords that are pretty much the leading credential that's being used. You have contractors, in many cases, 2 to 3 contracts later, after they've departed from that contract, still having login access to these systems. And so you have both a management issue on the credential, and you have this ability to have an authentication mechanism that's better than a password that an individual is either going to create themselves, which means it's probably easily guessable, or is going to write down on 10 post-its or keep a little notepad inside of their computer with these passwords in it because it's impossible to remember. And we have to get beyond that infrastructure.
Password 123 or...
Yes, easily guessable ones or you can imagine... If you are someone like a system administrator and you have 50 different servers that you're supposed to be managing on a daily basis, and so you implement a strong password policy and you have this 24 character, you know, the sign for boron and exclamation part, there's no way you're going to remember that. It's an unreasonable expectation. And so I think tying that into a PIV credential and then turning that capability into a machine issue in the back end is really a way to go.
You mentioned you go to talk to folks and they kind of pick apart these various things. What is the conversation like today when you go into a federal agency and they're saying, well, we've given credentials, we've given cards and so on to everybody that's supposed to have one. So, I mean, is the sense that you get from most people that they think their job is done? Or do most organizations understand that since security is an evolving issue, that this is an evolving issue as well?
Yes. So I would say a couple of years ago, it was probably more of a, we've issued these cards and this sounds, you know, looks to me like an unfunded mandate. How am I supposed to do this?
Right.
And I think that if you take a look now at attacks inside of our systems, it's really only 2 steps for any attack. It's gain access and then elevate your rights. And it doesn't make a difference if it's phishing or malware. Those are the 2 steps. And so if you can't get your arms around that gaining access piece with things like least privilege, and if you can't then control the escalation of those privileges to just the box that they live in, we're going to be suffering, you know, from this issue of spear phishing and other things for too far into the future. Mm-hmm. So those issues are real world issues, they're real world losses, and I think they've now created more of a recognition that there's real value in implementing the logical access for these systems.
We're almost out of time, but you mentioned in the first part of our conversation that there is not as much vision in this area as you would like to see. So I'll give you the chance to provide some of that vision. If you look at the trends that you see in the past couple of years and you look at the technology that's being developed in this area right now, what do you think the identity management space looks like, not even necessarily just in government, 2 years from now and 5 years from now, things that we can do that we can't that we will be able to do that we can't do today, or capabilities or anything like that?
Yes. So I think you start with a sound identity platform, and PIV and CAC is a great identity platform, the backend system, and derived credentials move you more into a mobile play. I think what you see in the future here is this ability to now leverage attributes. So everything that I may know about you, your certified, your clearance, what job that you have, and being able to take now that strong authentication and identity, knowing who you are, combining that with the attributes that apply to who you are, and then granting access. As opposed to today, which is mostly you've logged in, therefore you're on the network and you can go to wherever you'd like to go based upon how we've set the network.